The Star-Spangled Banner. In 1814, while the War of 1812 was still going on, the people of Maryland were in great trouble, for a British fleet had sailed into Chesapeake Bay. The cannon would be aimed at some town, but no one knew which. The ships sailed up one river, then came back and sailed up another, as if they had not decided where to go. The people who lived on the banks of these rivers fired alarm guns and lighted signal fires to let those who lived inland know that danger was near. The ships lingered, hesitated, then suddenly spread all sail and ran to the north up the bay. "They will surely attack us," thought the people of Annapolis, and they crammed their household goods into wagons and carts, even into wheelbarrows, and hurried away to the country as fast as they could. But the ship sailed past Annapolis. Then there was no question which town was to be attacked. It was Baltimore. As the fleet sailed on, General Ross, the British commander, spoke of his plans. "I shall have my winter quarters in Baltimore," he said. "What about the American militia, General?" asked one of his officers playfully. "Militia," replied Ross. "I don't care a straw if it rains militia." The fleet landed the soldiers at the mouth of the Patapsco River and sailed upstream toward the town. The men marched up the river for 5 miles. They met a force of American militia, and there was a sharp fight for 2 or 3 hours. Then the Americans retreated. "There will be no great trouble in taking the town in the morning," thought the leader, "and we will camp here tonight." When morning came, he found that, however it might be about taking the town, he would have some trouble in getting to it, for the Americans had dug ditches and dragged heavy logs across the road. It took the whole day to get inside of the place, and then they found it anything but an agreeable sight, for all along the hills above the city was a heavy line of entrenchments. There seemed to be plenty of men behind the entrenchments, and the British concluded that they would not take possession of their winter quarters at once. They thought it would be pleasanter to wait at least until after dark, when they would not be so plainly seen from the forts. "The cannon on our ships will surely silence Fort McHenry and the other forts and batteries by that time," they said. While the soldiers were stumbling over logs and rolling into hidden ditches, the cannon on the British ships were firing as fast as possible. The river was so shallow that the men of war could not get within range of the town. "We will bombard the forts," they said. "They will yield in a few hours, and then our troops can march up and take the city." For 24 hours, the terrific bombardment went on. "If Fort McHenry only stands, the city is safe," said Francis Scott Key to a friend, and they gazed anxiously through the smoke to see if the flag was still flying. These two men were in the strangest place that could be imagined. They were in a little American vessel fast moored to the side of the British Admiral's flagship. A Maryland doctor had been seized as a prisoner by the British, and the President had given permission for them to go out under a flag of truce to ask for his release. The British commander finally decided that the prisoner might be set free, but he had no idea of allowing the two men to go back to the city and carry any information. "Until the attack on Baltimore's ended, you and your boat must remain here," he said. The firing went on. As long as the daylight lasted, they could catch glimpses of the stars and stripes whenever the wind swayed the clouds of smoke. When night came, they could still see the banner now and then by the blaze of the cannon. A little after midnight, the firing stopped. The two men paced up and down the deck, straining their eyes to see if the flag was still flying. "Can the fort have surrendered?" they questioned. "Oh, if morning would only come!" At last the faint gray of dawn appeared. They could see that some flag was flying, but it was too dark to tell which. More and more eagerly they gazed. It grew lighter. A sudden breath of wind caught the flag, and it floated out on the breeze. It was no English flag. It was their own stars and stripes. The fort had stood. The city was safe. Then it was that Key took from his pocket an old letter, and on the back of it he wrote the poem, The Star-Spangled Banner. The British departed, and the little American boat went back to the city. Mr. Key gave a copy of the poem to his uncle, who had been helping to defend the fort. The uncle sent it to a printer and had it struck off on some handbills. Before the ink was dry, the printer caught up one and hurried away to a restaurant where many patriots were assembled. Waving the paper, he cried, "Listen to this," and he read, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?" "Sing it! Sing it!" cried the whole company. Charles Durang mounted a chair, and then, for the first time, the Star-Spangled Banner was sung. The tune was to Anacreon in Heaven, an air which had long been a favorite. The song was caught up at once. Halls, theaters, and private houses rang with its strains. The fleet was out of sight even before the poem was printed. In the middle of the night, the admiral had sent to the British soldiers the message, "I can do nothing more," and they had hurried on board the vessels. It was not long before they left Chesapeake Bay altogether, perhaps with the new song ringing in their ears as they went. The Star-Spangled Banner. Oh, say, can you see? By the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars, through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? On the shore, dimly seen through the mists of the deep, where the foe's haughty host in dread silence reposes, what is that which the breeze o'er the towering steep, as it fitfully blows, half conceals, half discloses? Now it catches the gleam of the morning's first beam, in full glory reflected now shines in the stream. 'Tis the Star-Spangled Banner! Oh, long may it wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. Oh, thus be it ever, when free men shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must, when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.